Welcome to Bedknobs and Broomflicks, the podcast that talks about witches, man-witches, warlocks, sorcerers, and other magic practitioners in movies, television, comic books, books, and just about everything. We also talk about heroic and just plain awesome animals as our favorite familiars, and witches in history. Sorry, this show will include spoilers. You've been warned. My name is unpronounceable version of how to spell a names because I've been getting annoyed by these names, but my name is actually Jane.
Janaxis.
Janaxis.
Her jinism. That sounds too much like jism. Let's just drop
I was
going to
say there is something called Jainism or something, or that's Jainerism.
My name is Linda, but in this episode, I'm a sexy cheeseling. Who's getting sand all up in there because I'm doing it like crazy on the beach.
breaking those trees.
I need to talk about that scene as soon as possible.
Well, just before we start jumping into that scene, because yes, I think that when I texted you, because you hadn't started reading this yet, and I was like, oh God, just wait till you get to this sex scene. I was trying not to spoil anything. So I was like, when I was done, I was like, okay, that happened. Yes, anyways, we are covering Empire of Storms by Sarah J. Maas. This would be the fifth book in the series. It was released in 2016. It is a very, 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 each of them have gone increasingly longer, as yes. Linda learned because she lost our bet. I think the words were, you can't expect me to finish this fucking tome in a month. And then I gave you 45 days and it still didn't happen.
So. And then I tweeted something recently when I just opened the Kale-centric book where I flipped a digital table. When I opened it and saw that it's like, I think over 670 pages or some shit like that of Kale-centric story. It's like, son of a bitch. No, I'm
and
done.
I even
I'm
told you, I was like, I think at the time I was maybe like 17% of the way in. I'm like, yep, I'm 17% of the way in and forcing my way through it. Have fun. Anyways, we're not talking about that book. We'll talk about next time we talk about Tower of Dawn, which is the sixth book, but that will be a while because we both have to get through the book. And I keep getting told by some people that it actually it gets better. I guess it's like they're surprised at how much they enjoyed it was the words that we got. But
are you sure
with
they're
how...
not just encouraging you because they feel bad for you?
Well, I think that where I have a problem, and it has to do with the ending to Empire Storms, is the way Empire Storm ends, and we'll talk about that, and then immediately going to Tower of Dawn, which you're doing a little bit of a, you know, look back in time here. It feels like you're ruining the climax of the fifth book by then coming back to this part of the scene. It's like, I know what you're trying to do. Like Game of Thrones kind of did it with, or you know, the Song of Ice and Fire did it with two of their books with different character backstory or different character narrations and points of view. But this one, it felt like such a weird cutoff. I was like, could we have introduced this one earlier if I was going to do this? Because I'm like, I want to follow where this one goes now. That's what I really want to do, but I have this weird feeling that's going to matter what happens in the sixth one. And yes, there is magic in the sixth one, so that's the only reason why we aren't just going to gloss over it. Because as I think as I texted you, I said, yeah, we're going to have to talk about Tower of Dawn because it's magic practitioners. We opened that Pandora's box on Twitter, and now that's where we are.
So this is our lives. Okay, I'm just getting right into it. I need to talk about the sex scene. So Rowan and Aelin have been talking about it for a while, and they've both been flirting. Like, we're gonna do it. Oh no, we're not. We're gonna do it. Oh no, we're not.
Or it's like, we're not gonna do it until we're here. Or we're like, I want to do it now. It's like, well, I don't want to do it now because it's not. And it's like, yeah. It's like, could you just bone me? It's like, no, no, we need to be at this point in the story.
No.
Well, guess what? They finally got to the point.
They finally got to the point, and like, Adrian's given me shit for this before with a Nicolas Cage movie. In the part where everyone is supposed to be like, ooh, that's sexy. I was, okay, so they're getting, like, they're boning down on a beach. And she gets so fucking hot and heavy that she just burns her clothes off. And, you know, as you do. And they go down to the bone zone on the beach. And it says, quote, ahem. She moved, hips undulating, begging him to go, go, go. So Rowan did, sliding a finger into her as his tongue flicked that one spot. And oh, God, she was going to explode into starfire. I have in my notes, no! There's sand everywhere, including his finger. You're gonna have a bad time.
You see that, people? She decided to include the sand in this instead of taking a nice clean area, maybe in the grass or some other, yes! You know, normal bed. You're gonna have a bad time.
Exactly. Like, it's just like, you know, ladies know what I'm talking about. Sometimes when you go to the beach, you kind of have to. I think
dudes would know too. You know, it can happen. I've cleaned sand out of my kids' shorts when we've come back from the beach. It's normal. You know, you're rolling around in, you're burying yourself in sand. You're hopefully not, you know, having like destructive sex on a beach. Where
not getting it all up in you.
Yeah. Super destructive sex. Super, this is not an environmentalist dream sex.
Yes.
How so many trees had to die for them to have sex?
So the whole time, like, you're supposed to be like, ooh, that's hot. I'm just like, oh, God, no, no.
Now you see why I was texting you, but trying not to say anything. Now all the previous text messages make sense.
I don't know if it just becomes, it's like, it's a thing about being an adult. I don't know, like, somebody who grew up, like, in a beachy area. Just like, no, man, you're gonna have a bad time. And I'll just say that it's a good thing that she has healing abilities.
Look, let's be really frank. A beach blanket isn't gonna cure that either. So you just you go find a place. You know, if you want to do it outside, the grass is fine. You know, they have a lot of ships nearby. Oh, do it in the ocean, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's right fucking there. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Oh, God. But whatever, Rowan and Aelin, you do you.
They did do each other.
Yeah, they did.
Multiple times later on, they make reference to some of the sex acts they're performing on each other afterwards.
That's true. I think I described it as the horniest in the series so far. Because everybody's fucking getting it on. Or trying to.
I was kind of curious, and I forgot to look this up, because one of the series that I know you and I liked was her other series, A Court of Thorns, and,
Thorns and Roses. Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious if this book was published or written around the same time, because, like, the first, I could say, like, with out any hesitation, I wouldn't mind giving these books to, like, say, a 13-year-old, a 12, 13-year-old, and say, like, here, read this. This is a fun fantasy book. You'll enjoy this. I wouldn't say the same thing for Court of Thorns and Roses because of the gratuitous sex acts. And I'm really not a prude. I fully believe that sex should.
I totally get it.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, I would just, I feel weird like saying, like, going like, oh, and here are all these different sex acts they're doing. And both these books, I'm like, were these written around the same time when she was just like, you know what?
Yeah.
People fuck, and people fuck in different ways, and here's the ways they are going to fuck.
Yes.
And I'm like, yep.
And yet, like,
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you on that one, but now I suddenly feel like this doesn't belong in the young adult section.
Yes, and that was my thing. It's like, I really enjoyed Court of Thorns and Roses, and I still do, but, and I'm looking forward to the next in the series. But when I found out that it won one of the, like, the Goodreads awards for best YA book, I was like, what? Like,
yeah, it drifts into what it drifts into it's not urban fantasy, but there's another like one step
like
up to
retelling a fairy tale.
Yeah, it's there's I'm trying to remember that, because there's another thing that's very it has a very similar thematic elements mm-hmm. to like the YA love romance triangles and everything, but then mm-hmm. they add in the more sexy time. And I know urban fantasy mm-hmm. Envelops that, but I know there's another term for it for the less because urban fantasy, I think, is also supposed to incorporate in like more modern times. But yeah, there's something where I'm like, this is like just a step up above for what I consider YA. Because to me, I guess YA is like 13 years old or something. That to me is what mm-hmm. YA consists of.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm wrong about the entire genre, but that to me is like, it's like, yeah, these are the books you give to like 13 year olds. And, you know, they both include, you know, series like everything from Harry Potter to mm-hmm. Hunger Games to like all those cancer books that some of us read when we were younger, where it's for those of you who didn't grow up in the 80s and 90s, there was an entire series of books all about a young girl who's about like a teenager who gets cancer.
Yes
and they were very popular. It was there are reasons I think that millennials have issues. It's because those were our popular books for teenage girls.
Oh, and we kind of sort of had Babysitter's Club, although that was a little, I don't know, that may have been like pre-YA, I guess.
Yeah, I always read those. I remember reading those in like later elementary school, like your fourth, fifth, mm-hmm. and sixth grade. And before that, there was like the Babysitter's Little Sister with like Christie's like little stepsister. And then there's also Boxcar Children. Like those were, but then we're getting into the younger generations. But yeah, that's, Boxcar but Children. Yeah, after that, it's, you move into that. Although then again, maybe I shouldn't really be that judgy because I was reading like the Bodice Ripper V.C. Andrews,
you know,
stuff when I was like 13 years old. Like, so I was like, maybe I'm being too judgy about this.
Well,
but the sex scenes weren't as gratuitous
thing,
in those either.
Like, I mean, when I was 13-ish, I was reading Anne Rice, but at the same time, Anne Rice wasn't in the YA section. You know?
True.
Like,
very true. And also, even the sex scenes in
prude,
those were,
it's just,
oh, sorry about that. Yeah, but I was gonna say the sex scenes in those were, a lot of them were very alluded to, like later on some of them got mm-hmm. gratuitous, but most of the time it was more implied than anything else that something was going on. Like, you can kind of fill in the bubble, you can fill in the parts that are missing, but it wasn't as like, oh no, this is exactly what they did. So mm-hmm. yeah
so I don't know, I guess that's a whole other discussion, but I because I really don't think that we're prudes, because, I mean,
I've never considered us prudes, but at the same time,
no.
Like, this is one of those ones where I was like, I don't feel like this has gone beyond the territory that I'd be okay letting a 13-year-old read this.
Yeah, like, if I gave this to, like, some relative who's like a 13-year-old girl, then I would, like, if me reading through it, I'd be like, oh shit, their mom's never gonna talk to me again. Like, oh, things just got awkward. I just gave a child porn. Cool.
I mean, we probably should specify, and granted, I don't have any reference for this because I've never read them. It's not like this is 50 Shades of Grey. I mean, we're definitely below that level of sexual gratuity.
Well,
but
I don't know.
Like, I've never read them. I don't have a good frame of reference for that. I have read the snippets, you know, one of those, like, I read this so that you don't have to, and they pulled choice quotes.
I read the first one. So it doesn't seem like as bad. Just so, like, because I didn't want to be the one of those people that just kept giving it shit without, like, trying it. And I read the first one, and I ended up making a game out of it because they... Like, during the book, everybody's either muttering or mumbling. And so I changed it. So every time I saw the word she muttered or she mumbled or whatever, I would read it out loud and I would change the word to queefed or queefing or queef, whatever the tense was.
Did you then like look over at Carlo and just say like, yeah, you married me?
Yes, like, you're the big winner, big guy. You got all this. But I feel like it got a little graphic. I mean, they're talking about sliding in fingies, but at the same time, you know, with I think that we think of 50 Shades of Grey as more more erotica because it's mostly poorly written erotica.
It's sold to be erotica.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's, oh my god, it's so fucking bad. Just the writing is just fucking terrible. But it's, besides that, like, it doesn't have much of a story underneath it. But with this one, it's like, I feel like if it would have just had 70% of this, then it would be on the same shelf. But anyway.
We talked about the scene that...
Yes.
I mean, that was probably the most graphic of the scenes where there's sex involved. You've got Manon and Dorian hooking up in a cabin, which, yeah, it's, that was one of those ones where I was like, I know she's not going to, but she could totally kill him in 5 seconds if she really wanted to.
And for some,
I like
reason
that sense of danger suddenly.
Yeah.
Say again?
For some reason, she doesn't want to kill him.
Well, to be fair, Dorian
likes him.
Dorian has gone better since he obviously, like, both got collared and then lost the collar. And he's obviously during this book, because you've got Kael going off and disappearing for this entire book because he appears in Tower of Dawn. So we don't have to talk about that, but he's going to go and try to get himself healed. You've got Aelin, Rowan, Adian, and Lysandra, along with Evangeline and Fleetfoot, going to see if they can get an army going so that they can actually, like, take down this evil force that's out there. So he's just kind of, like, left all alone to his devices of, like, yeah, I know you're grieving, dude, because, you know, you kind of witnessed a lot of people dying and your body took part in all
ways.
This horrible death in Mayhome, but bye! Yeah. We gotta go start a war! So, like, I kind of feel bad for him. It's like,
you cool?
Somebody
you okay,
needs
buddy?
Therapy! Somebody needs a shit ton of therapy right now! Somebody needs a
you're
friend!
Right. He's alright. He's alright.
I mean, plus his mom and his little brother, God only knows where. I have not.
Can I get
they have
you
disappeared.
A soda? Oh, actually, I took note of that because they actually talks about it twice. Let's see. Here we go. Boop, 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 boop. Okay. It says his mother and young brother were still ensconced in their mountain residence in Ararat. I love saying that. Ararat. He had not sent for them. He'd given the order to remain, actually. He had left them there. Rather than deal with his mother and brother, he told them to stay in those mountains. where they were now as good as lambs surrounded by a pack of wolves. But none of the whores or the sailors or the traders had news of Prince Holland's or Queen Georgina's fates. War was coming, and the fate of a child and a flippant queen who had never bothered to take power for herself was of little concern to anyone but Dorian, it seemed. So, woof.
I mean, he may have saved their lives by not calling them back, considering what happens afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unknowingly saved their lives. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because then you've also got Manon at the time, you know, dealing with her very non-candy loving grandmother. And Erewhon, the actual evil Volg, has shed the Duke Parrington skin or whatever. I just like to imagine him like just like
so when I heard that, just I was like, thinking of him taking off a chicken suit when you said that. Getting into now, a hot dog suit.
Well, now I've got like the Buffalo Bill suit in my head because of this. Goodbye horses.
Would you fuck me?
Anyway, so Manon's dealing with that. She's left a poor girl. You know, she left a lead out in the woods and said, like, here's food, here's water, just start walking that way, and I hope you survive.
Pretty much. Yeah.
By the way, we had talked about this off mic, but I'm just going to warn the audience. I have a feeling this is probably going to be a two-parter because we have, for the most part, four different stories going on, and
so
all of them end up
on.
Being incredibly important to the plot. And at some point, they do join up, but it takes a while. It takes a goddamn while.
Yeah. So with Manon. Her non-candy loving grandma. She gets pissed because she sends the witches out to basically storm
Rifthold.
Yeah.
Rifthold where Dorian and where you know Dorian is, and it's either if he survives, bring him back. Meh. Mm-hmm. So
and yeah, Manon goes in there.
They
like,
know he has magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So Manon goes in there trying to save him, and because I think somebody likes him,
somebody has a soul.
Yeah. Spoilers. But yeah, so she tries to save him, and then. And then the bitchy witch who's been trying to kill Manon, basically.
Well, it's part of the Yellow Legs. The Yellow Legs clan is the bitchy witch kind. Because there's the three. There's the bitchy witch. Sorry.
the witches.
The Yellow Legs witches. and the obviously blue... there's the Iron Teeth. And
or the Black Beaks.
The Black
and
Beaks,
the
yeah.
Blue
Yeah,
Bloods.
The Black Beaks, sorry. Yellow Legs and the Blue, yeah.
Yeah.
And, Manon ends up killing one of the Yellow Legs witches because the Yellow Legs witch she kills is like, well, they said if he is alive, we could bring him back, but he doesn't have to be alive. And, yeah. And at the time, you know, due to a very harrowing rescue attempt, Rowan is also sent out there because they get word when he's with Aelin and everybody else. They're told, oh, we found out that the Wyrmings are going to attack Rifthold. So Rowan's out there flying like a hawk, literally, to save Dorian.
I keep thinking of him as a seagull for some reason. But so they're out there to she saves him by killing a yellow beak. Yellow leg. One of the
he
big
now
birds.
Owes her a life debt, and she's also in deep shit.
Yeah. So, of course, a bitchy witch tells on her, and they decide that for her punishment that they must kill one of her 13. So they decide to kill her second, Astrid.
But one of the things one of the things that helps Manon is that Petra, because I think that she's going to probably play a bigger role. I'm hoping she is going to play a bigger role in the seventh book. Petra, who is the heir of the Blue Bloods, who is also the same person, who is also the girl that she saved, that Manon saved after her Werven. Abraxas was the main contributor to Petra's rescue, but she stepped in to try to save Manon's life. So instead, Manon's grandmother, who hates Astrid, was like, well, blood has to be spilled, so you have to kill her. So
yeah, she decides that she has to, Manon has to execute Astrid. And Manon's in this shitty situation where she has to kill Astrid, or, you know, what the hell's going to happen with the rest of her 13. So she's responsible for all of them. And then as she's about to execute her, Astrid whispers, please take my body back to the cabin. And she's referencing the cabin where she fell in love with a mortal man and got pregnant.
Gets pregnant. And then horribleness occurs.
Yes. God-awful horribleness. And so that just breaks Manon. And she's like, you know what? Fuck it. And she swipes at her grandma, and they get into an epic cat fight. And
Manon's grandmother clearly is not also a feeble grandmother. Manon's grandmother is a badass warrior.
She is spry.
This is not somebody who just threw down her cane and said, okay, lady, let's go. She was just like, oh, bitch, we're going to go.
Also, she seems to give very little fucks for Manon as far as anything past carrying on their lineage, she just could give less of a shit about Manon.
Well, and I mean, she even doesn't really, she didn't give a shit about her mom either. She basically said that her mother was too soft-hearted and everything. So, obviously as an insult. So, I don't think she cares. It is just about lineage. And I think at that point she was just ready to destroy that lineage. Or, I don't know. I was trying to think, this is not a really good long-term plan if you're trying to keep an heir around, because she is your only heir. So, unless you're going to force a pregnancy. Oh, God. And she probably would, too, because this grandma's a horrible, horrible bitch.
She really is. And, I found the quote in my notes where, in the last book, Astrid tells Manon that she fell in love with this mortal man, and he got her pregnant. But even though it was a mortal father, still they aren't able to reproduce very, very successfully. So witchlings are very, very, very important. Witch babies are very important to the Iron Teeth. And so she, unfortunately, the bebe was born stillborn. And they're talking about Manon's sweet grandma, quote, who had cast Astrid's stillborn witchling into the fire, denying her the right to hold her once, who had then beaten and broken her second, thrown her into the snow to die, and lied to Manon about it for nearly a century. So Manon just once Astrid says, you know, take my body back to the cabin, I think Manon just kind of snaps and she sees no, wait, this is a lot of shit. I'm tired of taking my grandma's shit. She's a horrible fucking person and a witch, and we're done. But as Jane says, she is not not a feeble old grandma. And she basically hands Manon her ass. She slices open her belly with one of her iron claws. And at one point, Manon is basically hanging off a cliff, and she tells her, "Oh, by the way, you're not really a Blackbeak. She is actually Croatian," and
which is the tribe they've been fighting with, and they blame for the loss of the Wastes and everything, where they're supposed to go back. Which, by the way, I hate the fact they call it the Wastes. So I'm just like,
yes.
Like, I just imagine like this desolate location where there's nothing. They're like, why do you want to go back there? Exactly. But anyways, their words, yeah. Whatever. But yes. So yeah, it's her mother and a Croatian prince ended up having Manon.
Had a Manon.
Having a Manon. Well, also, this was a reference. This is from a earlier book where they capture a Croatian spy who's wearing the red cloak that Manon now wears. Oh, yeah. Do you want to reveal it or should I?
Oh, no. Go ahead.
So it turns out that not only because Manon was instructed to kill this girl, and she does, but, you know, the Croatian girl who makes a reference or says something to Manon is an allusion to the idea that, oh, she knows that, oh, I'm your sister, by the way, from our dad. So she basically, and Grandma knew that, and Grandma made Manon kill her own sister, basically.
And she was a messenger trying to find Manon and bring her back.
Yep.
Yeah. Sweet grandmother says, quote, "As your mother labored to push you out, she confessed who your father was. She said you would be the one who broke the curse, who saved us. She said your father was a rare-born Croatian prince, and she said that your mixed blood would be the key. When you were a witchling, your father searched the lands for you. He never stopped loving your mother, loving her and loving you. So I killed him."
And then she killed her sister unknowingly. So yeah, again, Grandma not keeping candy in her purse and definitely a horrible, terrible bitch. No,
she is not knitting booties. And she, God, I mean, this is just like the perfect descriptor for her. It says, "Her grandmother took a step, smiling as she crooned, 'You are a Croatian, the last of your royal bloodline with the death of your sister at your own hand. You are a Croatian queen.'" And she basically tells her, yeah, you killed the last of your kind besides yourself, and you are a... like you're a sister witch killer. So now she's got to make her peace with that, and she's not doing so well with that. But first, like, okay, so now she's got this huge
gaping wound in her belly.
Yes. But sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, well, I was going to say how she escapes is she basically throws herself off the ledge, and your favorite, all-time favorite MVP champion of this book.
Abraxas.
Comes swooping in to catch her, and they fly off. And Manon's 13 also escape. Astarin escapes, but they all get separated because there are yellow legs on their tails, and... you know, she gets them to split up, and they end up killing, she ends up getting both of her pursuers killed, which is good, you know, because Abraxas is tiny, he can fit through things.
That's what he gets for being a run of the litter. It's something that wouldn't have happened with the bull that she wanted originally.
Titus. Which I have two images of Titus. I either have Titus Andronicus or I have Titus the comedian.
Yeah.
Neither of them would make good Wurvies. Maybe Titus Andronicus.
Yeah, maybe. I can see that.
Yeah. But just like, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But yeah, so she's on the run, and she gets separated from the rest of her 13. And sweet Abraxas basically you know, tries to take her to safety. She passes out because a lot of blood.
Blood.
Yeah.
Blood infection. Turns out they can bleed. and die from bleeding.
Yeah, apparently. But she is just being her usual badass self and forcing herself to get up and try to take care of her wound and like fighting off passing out and basically dying and
being tracked.
Yes, and being tracked because like it, at first like you don't know, but then I love this. Okay, so Abraxas is just being his usual sweet self.
And, flowers everywhere. Yeah. Flowers in my hair.
Would you like to play with me? I'm Abraxas.
We found our theme song.
But he's... at one point, it says he huffed, shifting in worry, and she hissed as her stomach tore more. Stop, she rasped. I'm fine.
He is the best nursemaid in this entire series.
He is so much. I love this. I had, because you know I can't get through one of these without sharing an Abraxas quote. This is a large quote? Head. Well, you know what I'm saying. a large head like nudged at her knee, and she found Abraxas there, neck stretched, his head just below her feet, the offer in his eyes. Not trusting consciousness to keep its grip much longer, Manon slid onto his wide, broad head, breathing through the ripples of fiery pain. His breath warmed her chilled skin as he gently lowered her onto the grassy clearing. She lay on her back, letting Abraxas nose her, a faint whine from him. And then, like, I have, of course, my little notes of, I just love him so much. And then this man groaned, and the wing instantly snapped back, revealing a leathery head and concerned eyes. You mother hen, she gasped out, sliding her arms beneath her and pushing up. But it's so, so fucking sweet because, like, it goes on to say powerful jaws closed around the collar of her tunic, hoisting her up with such gentleness, Manon's chest tightened. And at that point, I realized, like, because she's never, the way she's been brought up and by mean-ass grandma, she's never known tenderness and love. And I feel like Abraxas and her 13 are really, like, the first that she's ever known about that, like that sense of family and caring for another.
But. Yeah, I mean, and even though she tries to be very stone cold with her 13, it's clear that she cares about Astrid a lot. And she's very, I mean, there's a lot of things that she obviously has to deal with. The fact that she didn't know that Astrid was horribly hurt by her grandmother. Now the fact that her grandmother made her kill her sister and also killed her father. And I'm just going to say it right now. I'm going to assume that probably also had a hand in her mom's death, even though we don't know that for a fact. I'm not sure, but let's just go with it because at this point, you know, she was definitely not going to offer medical aid if her daughter was dying, clearly. Grandma was not going to be the person to run for, like, some hot water and, you know, stop the bleeding.
No, yeah. She's not grabbing the midwife.
Yeah. Midwife? What the fuck is a midwife?
But, yeah, so then Manon finds out that she's being stalked by a creepy-ass Ilken creature. And... it describes the creature's eyes of glacier blue gleamed even in the shadowed wood, and a full red mouth made for the bedroom. And I couldn't help it. I was like, that's exactly what I have. A full red mouth made for the bedroom. Yep, that's me. I had to share that with Carlo, too. I was like, yep, I know it. And there was another line.
You can find Linda's profile on.
Right. Like fans only or only fans. But there's another part in here where I read when I was recovering from my surgery. And it says, the witch was lucid but pissed off. So it's like, yeah, I can totally relate to this right now. Lucid, but pissed off.
Carl, it was weighted about me. It's about me, Carl. Okay, yeah. Linda, go to sleep. Shh.
This is about me.
Put the book away.
It's me. It's me. Are you awake? It's me.
Oh, God, go to sleep.
Oh, man, it's a joy to be married to me. But yeah, I also found another quote that I fucking love, and it brought up some questions for me. It's Fenris slid in behind them, his attention going right to the witch, no doubt stunned by the beauty, the grace, the blah 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 perfectness of her. And I have in my notes, is this something that Sarah J. Maas just meant to edit out later? Because this is how I feel. Like, I long for a normal looking fucking character or an unattractive person who isn't a baddie. Like, can't there just be a lovable Bob for fuck's sake, or Ethel, the beloved chunky cook? And
you need a Myrtle in your life.
Yes. Where's your Myrtle? And like, can't the Lord Pirate Rolf be like a total dog? No, apparently not. Like, everybody is just like, well, it, yeah, unless they're a baddie, they're hot as fuck, and there's just no way around it. Like, everybody's hot as hell. And then
everybody wants to bone each other.
Yes. Everyone's, yeah, everybody. And like, everybody is pairing off. And that being said, I got really pissed off because they are pairing everybody off. And I'm just like, can't someone just be happy, just hanging out by themselves?
Evangeline. I mean, she leaves early on, but she's not paired off with anybody. I know she's 12.
Also a child.
I know. She gets the dog, though. They send her away, she gets the dog. Which, by the way, I feel like the dog was written in, and they're just like, oh, shit, mm-hmm. She has this dog. I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
This 13-year-old child could take care of this dog, which
like, oh, the dog shit, already seemed to like the 13-year-old child. There was a dog in the first book. Yes. But, and yeah, the dog, like, totally helped her kick some ass in the first book, too. But anyway, yeah, also, you find out that Rowan is bi, which was pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Although it does also kind of, I don't know, it just kind of seemed to be a little shoehorned in there. But I don't give a shit. I was happy.
Yeah, I was just like, I've had men. I've had women. Like, you had men? Go on. Yeah. Oh, we're not going to go on? Okay, never mind.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. Or am I a liar? Is it Adian? Adian who is? Oh, might have been Adian. But either way, like one of the guys, one of the Fae guys. Fuck Fae guys.
I kind of want to say it was Rowan. I don't want to say it was Adian, only because Adian doesn't really seem to discuss. He comes off as the playboy, but he mm-hmm. kind of seems to act like you know, he's got that Bruce Wayne sort of thing. I think I mentioned that earlier. Where you know, he's like, I'm the total playboy, but I'm trying to get my kingdom back, and I just need to pretend to be like, you know, this, you know, like lazy, no good.
Right, but I think I was wrong in my initial note that Rowan is bi. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Adian. Yeah, because Lysandra's talking about like. Talking to Adian, saying, like, are you sure it doesn't bother you that I was a courtesan and I've been, you know, I've been raised to sexually please, you know, people. And I've been with a lot of people. And he says, basically, here it is.
Oh, you're right. It is Adian. Okay. I was looking this up. We're like, okay, let's settle this one. Because
I screwed like, in my up my head, notes. It was sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I mean, it's been a while since I remember which one it was. And you've just got two, you know, smoking hot Fae men who are talking about stuff.
Basically. And he says, I'm going to tell you that there is nothing unappealing about you. Nothing. I've been with just as many people, women, men, I've seen and tried it all. Her brows had risen. Adian shrugged. I find pleasure in both, depending on my mood and the person.
Oh, yeah. And that's as far as they get in that conversation.
Yes.
Because at the same time, like, they're trying to be undercover where she's, you know, shapeshifted into a more buxom girl. And, you know, he's being lecherously leery while they're spying, just like staring down her cleavage. Like, yeah. That's fine. What I.
But I found that really sweet, too, because he's like, you know, don't worry about your past. And like, I'm not going to judge you. And, you know, like, just because, you know, like, you were forced into that life and hell, I chose it. Like, I'm not going to judge you.
And I do argue that they had the healthiest start to their relationship, even though they've never consummated their relationship. It's just kind of alleged that they will at some point. Because they actually don't start out hating each other. Yes. they're kind of more, I don't know, like, okay, you exist, I exist. We're just hanging out, you know, we've got all these other lunatics around us, like trying to plot overthrow, and we're kind of trying to help them out, but we have no idea what the hell they're doing. Half of them are trying to bone each other and we're trying not to get involved. And they're like, oh, well, you seem nice. And and then it kind of keeps going from there, and they tease each other like in a friendly way. So like they both kind of,
And by the way, proposes to her at one point.
He proposes to her.
Just to get a rise out of her.
Yeah, exactly. He proposes to her because, you know, he's worried that she's going to die because Lysandra is, in my opinion, the major MVP of this goddamn series because she can shapeshift into anything. And her underwater Leviathan is pretty goddamn cool. And then he's worried that she's going to die and she's on the beach and he's trying to keep her awake. And he says, like, I'll marry you. And she's like, <"Arr.">
I just got a visual of Puff the Magic Dragon, like, beach going,
Well, he even when he realizes that that's making her, like, stay, like, cognizant of what's going on around her, he's like, yeah, I'm gonna turn you into a wife and everything. He just like goes off those long about like, how they're gonna get married and how they're gonna like how he's gonna like do this for her and everything else. She's just like, and she's definitely getting off the she's, you know, in her own way, she seems to be saying, like, you are an idiot. Would you please just shut up? I'm going to bite you later when I actually have the strength. But she also, it's also clearly she understands and it's very, very sweet.
Yeah. And I like them because their relationship happens pretty naturally. But then also you have, like, as you were saying before, you have a lead on her own. And she eventually meets Lorcan, who is just like, he's the biggest Fallout Boy, like a little emo guy. Like, in the beginning.
We haven't read Tau of Dawn yet. You don't know if that's a kid. But yes.
Yes.
Well, Lorcan's going through some issues with his current, you know, peace, Maeve, and everything, and trying to stay loyal to her. And, you know, he's tracking down
Lover, master, a lead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Old lady.
Well, and he says that he knows what a lead is because she's supposed to be half witch as well. And he's like, I can smell it on you when they do finally meet up. Because he's basically tracking her. She gets the idea he's tracking her, but she can't stop because she has no water or food or clean water. I think she even references in the book at some point that she did drink water and it turned out to not be good. And
yeah, I think she had it coming out of both ends.
Yeah, I think that's that's why I always say it's like, man just left her there and said, like, here, head north, there's north, go. To go and find both Selena and Eileen, Aelin, not knowing they're the same goddamn person.
But it's like, but thanks for your help, goodbye.
Well, it's Lorcan who reveals that, by the way, they're the same goddamn person. Because she's under the belief that, you know, she has to find these two different people. And he's like, nobody told you?
Actually, at first, he's kind of like,
he doesn't say it either. But he is like sitting there thinking, like, God, she's dumb. Like, that's at least how he kind of portrays it. Like, he doesn't realize she's, okay, I'll just kind of follow her. And she'll lead me right to, you know, Aelin, who I'm trying to take care of and everything. And yeah, it's...
Yeah, he doesn't.
And then he
like
does finally
Aelin.
Tell her at some point.
But he's chasing or like stalking her, but then they get attacked by a bunch of
another Ilkin.
Yeah, Ilkin, kind of like werewolf types.
A bunch of Ilkin, actually. Like, I think like there was like four of them or something. Yeah, it was. And he tells her to run, which I'm just thinking, like, you're an asshole.
Yes.
He was such a fucking asshole.
He really she's, fucking is.
Because her leg is still effed up. It's why she's, like, not
mangled.
Traveling as fast. Yes. Because her uncle is a dick. So.
Yeah. And she finds a way to outwit the Ilkin while he's lurking and he's this. Gonna just like throw around his swords and just keep throwing them around until he kills everything. So, you know, he's kind of like, well, she's actually kind of smart. Maybe I'll see where, you know, like I'll hang out with her a little bit more and see what her deal is. And she lies to him and gives him her mother's name, Marion. So for a while, they think she has no idea who he is or that he knows Aelin. And he thinks
she also doesn't know
Marion.
Who he is because she's trying to run away from her uncle, who is also chasing after her. So there's a lot of chasing going on. Again, I feel so bad for Aelin because it's like she's just, again, she's left out in the middle of the woods and just,
right?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we have to escape. God. We can't really leave you close to civilization, so bye.
Yeah, Aelin has a really hard time, you guys. Like, she does not get much, like, downtime or much time to be like, la, la, la. Like, roll in the grass.
Like, smell the flowers.
La,
I don't get
la,
the word in.
Yeah.
Although,
no, she doesn't get that time.
Lorcan does help her, you know, because he, you know, he kind of braces her foot, like, with his magic, so she can actually, like, walk a little bit. Because at first he just does it because he's annoyed at how slow she is, because she can't walk that fast.
And he's
and he
just
can't
a
carry
dick.
I know. Like, but at the same time, it's like, oh, that's kind of nice in a roundabout way, I guess.
Yeah, but like there, you could tell like he's getting kind of pissed off with her because she's pretty smart and she's pretty wily. So she finds a basically like a traveling, I don't want to call it
a traveling theater group
like,
or circus group.
Yeah, and she decides to worm her way in with them. So they'll take her past the guards and they could be like, we are not the droids you're looking for. We're part of this carnival troupe or whatever. And so there's this this hot woman that's part of the group. Her name is Molly. And so this is told from Lorcan's perspective. It says, Marion, because he thinks her name's Marion. Marion carefully observed Molly climb into the driver's seat beside the raven-haired beauty who... Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Molly's the homely-looking woman. Anyway.
see? There's your Myrtle.
There's my Myrtle. But she's not a great character. Anyway.
I know. I'm just trying to help.
excuse me, observed Molly climb into the driver's seat beside the raven-haired beauty who paid Lorcan absolutely no heed. Well, having Marion as his god's damned wife certainly put an end to anything more than appreciation of the stunning woman. It was an effort not to growl. He hadn't been with a woman in months now. And of course, he'd have the time and interest in one, only to be shackled by another one's lies, his wife.
It's because Marion pretends that they're husband and wife so that they can sell it better. So
yeah,
to hide in with the traveling caravan.
And she's like, so yeah, he basically
cuckolds him.
Yeah, basically. And he's just getting really pissed. And at this one point, it says, Marion rolled her eyes, patting Lorcan's knee. He nearly cringed at every touch. Even with his lovers outside the bed itself, he didn't like casual, careless contact. Some found that intolerable. Some thought they could break him into a decent male who just wanted a home and a good female to work beside him. Not one of them had succeeded. Spoiler! She's a gonna.
And he's still hung up on Maeve because of that stupid blood oath. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know that, how that's it goes. Gonna be,
yeah. You know, when you share blood with a fae queen and, you know, decide to take an oath and then you get kind of wrapped up in her. It's, you know, a tale as old as time.
Never again. Oh, I found a part that I think that you would really, really appreciate. Okay, so it's right about the time where they're both like, hey, you know, the other one's kind of fucking hot. It's just, Lorcan was not a natural performer. No, he had the gall to actually look bored up there, bordering on outright sullen. But what he lacked in charm, he made up for with his shirtless, oiled body. And holy gods. And I put in my notes, like, Jane, he's marinating.
I'm glad you picked up on that, too. It's like, I remember the shirtless nakedness. I didn't think about the roasting part.
He's all oiled up and ready to go.
Now I'm just imagining, like, Illy coming up behind him with, like, a little basting squirter and just, like, squirting oil on him.
Some rosemary. Like, hey, what are you doing? Like, nothing.
It's confetti. Shush. Why does it smell like thyme? Shush.
It's healing herbs. Yes. You is seem to be garlic? Getting a sunburn. Shh. You're not going to eat me, are you?
Why are you slicing up carrots and potatoes?
Oh, but then there was another line directly after that. Okay, this is a trickle of sweat slid through the crisp spattering of dark hair on his sculpted chest. What the fuck does this mean? A crisp spattering of dark hair? What the fuck? What is that?
You was know when you set a lighter already? To your leg hair and it kind of crisps up? Maybe he's been doing that.
Because he's been slow roasting. Okay.
I wasn't wrong. They are cooking them. The fire got too close at that time. This is why you have to shave your face before you cook them, or else you're going to get that hair problem. Please join me in my next cookbook, How to Cook a Fae Male in 5 Easy Steps.
Grade A.
Roasted, basted, over a pit. Slow cooker recipe is actually perfect, but you're going to have to take some time.
Do any of their wyverns, like, breathe fire or anything? I mean, that would be handy.
Not to my knowledge. We're not talking about the dragons here, so no.
True.
I mean, Aelin can set things on fire. She could burn her clothes off. I'm sure she can burn hair off. So.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. You got the fire already ready then. See? Save on materials. That's what I keep saying. If you can find ways to save on materials, you can cook a very inexpensive meal for the whole family. Take it from a mother. We know how to save money. Find your magic starter. Your magic fire starter.
Twisted fire starter.
Get her really hot and bothered.
You're going to want some sand, okay?
Don't ask why. For some reason, the sand really does it for them.
That and just killing trees left and right. Like, it's going out of style. They are are not conservationist. But Lorcan and Elide start getting hot for each other, and slowly.
And trusting each other.
But it's another one of those relationships that you were talking about, where it's like they start off kind of hating each other or just accepting each other, like, begrudgingly.
Their existence is here, and that's as much as I'm accepting.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm going to use this person to get what I want, to get where I want, and then we're done. But then it's like, but he does kind of smell good when he's been out in the sun for a while. Or maybe he's thinking like, well, her foot is mangled, so it would be like take a while for her to get away. So,
God, that just got so dark.
Maybe witch
you
means
can't
good.
Run.
I would just like to apologize.
Yes.
But they start getting hot for each other, and
well, it helps that he saved her from her uncle, who made a surprise visit to her.
Okay, that was the point in the book where I was just like really invested.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I really like Elide, and it's hard not to. And she, oh God, that hurt. She gets like,
I don't know if that was a physical or a mental hurt you just about to express.
Kind of both. My foot's hurting, but
I'm sorry.
She, me too, man. She goes off. They go into a village. They stop in a village where she's basically held captive, and then she finds out that her uncle is there, and he has a bunch of Ilken to keep her there, and he's going to put her in basically a little cage and drag her back to
be a brood mother, basically.
Yeah. And yeah,
he's going to do what they did to the not surviving Yellow Legs. So impregnate her and make her have, you know, little Ilken horrible babies until her body mm-hmm. gives out. Yes.
A litter.
She's part witch. Little witchling yep. Ilken babies. Vog babies, whatever.
And I think, like, actually, that was one of the few parts in the book where I think I said something out loud. Like, oh, no. like, I did not want her goddamn uncle to show up. But then she becomes a fucking badass. And, like, it's kind of amazing because she's okay, so he makes her believe that what he believes that Lorcan left her there, but Lorcan has been setting up the area and the rooftops so he could basically take down her uncle and the Ilken, and but she comes out, and before he can do anything, she decides like she told him before, like, I'm not going back. There's no way I'm going back alive. And so she basically, you know, tries to maneuver away, and in doing so, she broke her own nose on the cage. But they weren't expecting her to maneuver like that, and so she took the opportunity to grab a dagger, and she was about to stab herself. But Lorcan came in the nick of time and throws an axe. And instead of aiming for her uncle, he aims to not like cut her hand, but to hit it with the handle. So she lets go of the dagger. But and so he starts like taking down Ilken. But then she just kind of like turns into this like ass-kicking badass. It says there's this Lorcan watched as that woman crept up behind the distracted Ilken and drove the hatchet into its wings with an injured wrist, with her nose leaking blood down her face. The Ilken screamed, thrashing to grab her even as it crashed to its knees where she wanted it. The axe was swinging again before its scream finished sounding. The sound was cut off a heartbeat later as its head bounced to the stones. And oh my God, I just love this so much. It says, when it fell silent, she said in a quiet, merciless voice he'd never heard her use, clear despite the blood clogging one nostril, I want Erewhon to know that the next time he sends you after me like a pack of dogs, I'll return the favor. I want Erewhon to know that the next time I see him, I will carve Manon's name on his god's damn heart. And because it, also her dad, her uncle has her believing that they killed Manon. Says tears rolled down her face, silent and unending as the wrath that now sculpted her features into a thing of mighty and terrible beauty. And I put fuck yes.
I was gonna say, and Lorcan got a little hard at that point.
Yes. I think he was like, I'm a little scared, but also really hard right now. But yeah, she just turned into this badass, and then I fucking love it because at that point she's pretty much like, oh, but I see one of you got away, so I don't need you alive. So kills him, and I'm like, oh God, yes, because like her fucking uncle gets away on one of the flying Ilken. Like grabs him and takes off with him, and she throws the hatchet, and I think Lorcan says it was only like a hair's breadth away, but she almost got him, and I was so frustrated at that.
You were like, no,
yes, because I know it wouldn't.
For
be
all you
much
know,
of a
Lorcan
story.
Was just being kind, and she missed by like a mile. It was like 2 feet.
5 feet.
He's like, yeah, it was so close, honey. It's okay. You're still pretty hot, though.
He threw a rock or a pebble to like move it a little off course. Like, oh, you almost got him, honey. Like, wow, look at you go. But it's about that time, like, they start kind of falling in love. And yeah. I was so pissed off because they were pairing everybody off. Everybody's fucking pairing off. And even like Manon's trying to get it on with Dorian and vice versa. And Dorian's
Well, we gotta explain
total...
how Manon and Dorian get back together, probably.
Because Dorian's being a total cunt tease.
Well, I mean, let's get back, because like right now we've left Manon like out in the middle of the field bleeding, and we haven't even explained how Rowan rescued Dorian. Like I said, this I do think we have to be honest. This is probably gonna be a two-parter, but I know. But I mean, because you've got
listeners.
Yeah, I know.
Hello to all you boils and ghouls. This here's Linda, and I am tired. I am tired as the dead. But man, do I love that damn smoking hot wyvern character. I talk too damn much again, so somebody's gonna have to stop me. So we'll be coming right back at you with continuation and conclusion to this episode next week in part 2, baby. Ow!